Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Who Inspire. My guest today is Rosemary Omeo. And Rosemary is a journalist, and she's gone on some pretty interesting assignments, which is really inspiring. So, Rosemary, I want to welcome you back into the United States. You spent some time You spent a lot of time overseas, but before you did that, you were a professor at college, right?
Yes, at the University at Albany. That's my hometown. And I was there for almost 10 years. And then when Donald Trump was elected, I decided that I should go back into investigative reporting in the field. So I went back in for a couple of years. I'd love to have stayed longer, but I'm back in Albany. My mother lives here, and she's elderly now, so we live together.
So how many years did you spend overseas, and what did you do?
I have worked since 2004 with a group called the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project. It was started by two American editors, and they hired, at first it was just Bosnian journalists, but the group has now expanded and covers much of the area in Eastern Europe and what was the former Soviet Union. They have outfits in South America now and in Africa. They work with groups, and they do cross-border investigative reporting. So even while I was here as a professor, I still would spend holidays and summers back working with OCCRP. So for the past 2 years, from 2017 until just a few months ago, I was working with them full time, and they had me stationed in Amman, Jordan, working with Middle Eastern journalists. And the goal of all of this is to spread the American ethos, and I mean ethics by that, ethos and methods of investigative reporting around the world. It's a wonderful job, a wonderful ambition, very hard to do, and I don't know how successful we've been, but we've been giving it a great shot.
You know, when people hear investigative reporting, they think about, well, I do anyway, Woodward and Bernstein during the Watergate era. So are there a lot of women who are investigative reporting?
Well, it's an increasing number. Back when Woodward and Bernstein, in their heyday in the early 70s, there were far fewer. But women have really come a long way in journalism, including in management of newsrooms and in some of the harder, that is, better paid and more risky parts of journalism. That would include investigative reporting, lots of computer assisted reporting. There are analysts and data journalists. It's all the same thing, but that's what we call it now. And those are increasingly women. So, and editors, we see far more women editors than I remember when I was starting out. And that's all a good thing.
So would you say that journalism, there's a lot of opportunity for women in journalism today as we speak?
Well, that's a tricky question because journalism is so changing. It's hard to say what the opportunities are. They certainly are not in newspaper or in print, which was the field that I went into back in the 70s when I was coming out of college. Newspapers are in trouble. There's no headline there. But investigative reporting is still needed, and journalism has changed. It's become much more digital. There's book-length journalism, which is much more prominent now than when I began. And there are many women interested in the public service aspect of journalism. What you try to do in investigative reporting is to figure out what's wrong with the systems that are set up. You start from an idealist point of view. This is the way it should be. And then you research and write about the way it really is, which, sad to say, is usually lacking. And so that's public service that you're doing. You're trying to teach citizens what's going on and what they can do to make sure things get better. And I think that women are really great at that. They have a keen sense of a story of people who are hurt by things that are unfair. They have a sense of justice, and they're great storytellers. So women are very good at journalism, and that's, I'm veering away from your question, which is about whether you can make money at it. We're still checking that out. We are looking for new ways to monetize journalism that we put out. And women will be part of that entrepreneurial effort as well.
Now, when you were out of the country and you were in the Middle East, right? The Middle East?
Well, that's right, Jordan. Mm-hmm.
So you that must have been quite a culture shock to you. Growing up and being an adult in America and going overseas and seeing the different cultural aspects, for instance, how women are treated, what they do, what opportunities they have. Would you say it was quite a shock to you?
You know, Cynthia, the biggest cultural shock I got was back in 2004. And I had always worked up until that time in the United States in U.S. newsrooms. And I took a night fellowship. It's sort of like the Peace Corps for journalists. And I went from Florida, where I was working in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I ended up in Kampala, Uganda, in Eastern Africa. And that was a culture shock. I can remember the first week after I hit there, even though I'd been warned about it, I mostly stayed inside and only ventured out every once in a while. Everything was different. The way the place looked, the people, it was like nothing I had ever had in my experience before. And it was not like being a tourist, you know, where you go to a hotel and the hotel looks just like home. Nothing about it was Western. I would go out to the street outside the apartment where I was staying, and there was no street. It was a rutted dirt road. Garbage would be burning on the side of the road. That was how they got rid of garbage. And men would be peeing against a wall because there's no outdoor toilets. And this was normal. And it took a really long time at least a week before I just said, okay, I just have to throw myself into this. And then, like with any experience, you make friends and you learn the people. And before long, at the end of that year, I can remember, was working in the newsroom, and a visitor came in from London, and I could hear him across the room saying to somebody, "Who's that white woman over there?" And I looked around. I didn't know who he was talking about. It was me, because you just become so much part of what you're working on. And I loved the journalists, and I made friends, and suddenly it seemed like home. And I would say the same with Amman Jordan. Amman is much more Western than anything I saw in Africa. But yeah, it is very different. The language was a big barrier to me. I don't speak or read Arabic, and many covered women. And it was a little bit shocking at first. Food is great. The people are warm and welcoming and super smart, super interested in what we were doing. And so I really don't have trouble, I think, anymore making myself at home anyplace. People are the same everywhere. How's that?
Wow, that's
a little wordy.
That's pretty good. So when you were younger and you were going to college and you were deciding upon a career for yourself, what inspired you to get into journalism?
Oh, this is a terrible story on me, and I will tell it. Actually, it came in the sixth grade, if you can believe that, when we had this inspiring teacher. She was a Russian immigrant. Miss Sophie Zelnick was her name. And as we were leaving the sixth grade that day, she had a personal note that she said to everyone. And I heard her say, "You're a wonderful writer. You should be a reporter." And I was infuriated that she was not saying that to me. She was saying it to another classmate who I maintained some contact with. And it was like, what? Why is she not saying that to me? That's when, actually, out of pure jealousy, I think, I decided that I wanted to be a journalist. I went to college for journalism. I worked on newspapers from the minute that I left that class, I think. I guess junior high doesn't really count, but I began working in newspapers, and I have never, ever wanted to be anything else except a teacher. And I, you know, of course, you know, I taught as well, but it was always writing and journalism, and I did not like it so well as being a reporter and working in newsrooms.
So
I wanted to how Sophie made us want to change the world, to make it a better place, and maybe influenced by Watergate, which you've mentioned. I thought journalism was the way to change the world. If I had to do it over, I still want to change the world, but I'm not so sure I would go into journalism because of business problems with it. It might be law or environmental lawyering, something like that. These are people who now are going to politics. We're chasing people away from politics. But you'll notice how women are moving into that field now too, where they're badly needed. It's the same sort of thing where you look at the ideal. This is the way it's supposed to work. This is what we're supposed to be doing in our country, and things are not working. Why is that? Let's fix it. So
would you say that journalism is still a male-dominated profession?
Yes, I would. If you look at who owns the media, who are in those most of those top jobs, if you look at salary differentials, yeah, I think it's impossible to say women have completely broken through, but it's such a lot better than it was 30 and 40 years ago. You have women columnists, you have women editors, you have Arianna Huffington, who is a news executive and entrepreneur. So things are much different than they were, but men still get the high salary. There's some talk, a lot of talk and study about how journalism has turned into a pink-collar ghetto in the same way that teaching, elementary school teaching, for example, or nursing remains a pink-collar ghetto. And as more women have been invited into the field, men have looked elsewhere for jobs. They've gone to other fields, and salaries and job security has dropped. And definitely I saw this in newspapers, and it may be true for the whole field.
You know, since journalism is still a male-dominated field, what's it like to be in a profession that is male-dominated, covering, let's say, politics, which is still male-dominating. So, in other words, a field that's male-dominated covering another field that's male-dominated. How do you cope with that?
Yeah, there's an increasing number of really excellent political journalists. You see that if you turn on to any of the network or the cable television stations now. I'm thinking of Dana Bash, for example, who covers Congress for CNN, or Katie Tour, who covered the Trump campaign and has written a book about that. She's now on MSNBC. A lot of very young women who are covering, and you know, typically like Katie Tour, you get into it because no one thought at the time that Trump would go anywhere. They thought it would be a very short-lived assignment, so they give it to the young woman. You know, she gets, but she took her chance, and she did her homework. You have to work really hard as any journalist, but especially if you're a woman, you want to get noticed. And you just have to be able to stand up for what you think is right, not be intimidated by men who mansplain or talk over you. You have to think quick on your feet and just go for it. You have to really want it. It's not easy to be a journalist at all. This isn't just women, but maybe it affects them more because we're trying to too often raise babies and take care of a house at the same time as you're being journalists. But something happens, news breaks in the middle of the night, you're working all night long. You know, if you've got tables
right.
set for a whole family dinner and a fire breaks out somewhere and you're a news reporter, you go cover the fire and you just leave everybody sitting there. This does not make for happy families in many times. And it's too often you're making a choice between your priorities, your family or your profession. The best reporters always pick the profession.
Now, do you find that editors and publishers are still biased towards men when it comes to heavy-duty reporting?
No, I think that you're seeing a whole new generation of male journalists who have been brought up in the age of feminism and now of Me Too, and I find them incredibly more receptive than when I began, when there was no maternity leave, for example, or when I was pregnant and so I was not thought fit to cover a Bruce Springsteen concert. Come on, give me a break. These are people who have the role models of their mothers and even grandmothers now. So they're much more receptive and they have wives and families of their own. They share duties. It's much easier from that regard than it was when I started out. You know, I've said over and over, you've heard me say this already, Cynthia, that my generation did a terrible job explaining Hillary Clinton, for example. She was a valedictorian who made national news on the day she was leaving college. She gave a valedictory address that on Vietnam, and she called on politicians to be far more courageous than they were. And yet she always, what did she have to do? The same thing that we were expected in our generation. She subjugated herself. She put herself, submitted to a husband who's equally talented, let me say, and more personable. And so she became a first lady twice, first in Arkansas and then in Washington, D.C. But she was at the same time a brilliant lawyer, a major political statistician, very courageous. She stood up and fought. She could answer this question, you know, how do you fight in a male dominated field? That's what she did. And now, largely as a result of women like her, and including her, it's easy for the young women I teach in college to want to desire to be anything, to be a politician, to be a lawyer, to do anything, an astronaut. And they just expect that it will happen. And they're right to do that, but it didn't come naturally. And it's so easy now that we've forgotten what it took. And when I look back, you know, that's one thing I'm proud of, that I was part of standing up for what women could do in a newsroom and in their lives.
So if you, I'm sorry, what would you say to women who are listening to this who are aspiring to be a journalist?
What would I say? I would say learn a language, because English is not enough in the world anymore. If you know another language, you can go any place and work there. I wish I had learned that earlier. I thought it was fine to just stay in one place. I like moving around. Second, I would say figure out what you want to do. Where do you want to work? What's the goals? When you look back in 40 years, what do you want to be able to say you've accomplished? Because if you don't know what it is you're working for, how can you do the work to get there? So that's really important. I would say think clearly about family. I have three children. I certainly love them and want them, and they're a part of my life that I would never have done away with. But, you know, that involves sacrifices and changes, and you have to think of it ahead of time, not when you're 30 and the biological clock is ticking and you're trying to make decisions that are more out of like desperation and time than having been thought out. How many children? When are you going to have them? How do they fit into the job that you're doing? And the next thing is to just do the work, study. You have to learn the topic that you're interested in. You have to keep going to classes to learn more. You have to talk to everybody. You have to get involved. It's to be a journalist is to be a very engaged citizen, and know that from the start. That's what I would say.
Now that you're back in the United States, you do a program on weekdays, a roundtable program discussing national interests. Is that fun? Do you enjoy that?
Oh, I love it. This is the roundtable on WAMC, created by and hosted created by Alan Chartok and hosted by Joe Donahue most of the time. And I tell you, it's like it's like that little group of old men that you see in McDonald's all over the place where they get together every morning over coffee and they talk about stuff. That's what I feel like it is. These are people I know and respect, don't agree with most of the time. And even though overwhelmingly they're Democrats, they're liberal-leaning, there's still lots to disagree and to discuss. And I'm amazed at not that I like it, but that viewers, listeners like it. It feels like how come they want to get in on the conversation too? That's what's happening. And they write to us, we write back. It's a blast. It's great. And it does give me hope that, you know, people are remain interested in what's happening in government and with their country.
So I've been asking you questions about your profession. Rosemary, tell our audience a little bit about who you are and what you've done and what you're doing now.
I hate these questions. Tell me a little about yourself. Okay, so I've been a journalist since like 1972 when I got out of college at Syracuse University, and I worked at a variety of newspapers as a reporter and an editor across the U.S. until 2002, and I got fired from a paper in Sarasota, Florida. It was the most traumatic thing that ever happened to me still, I think. And it was over an ethical issue of talking to a reader directly. But anyway, after that, after I got fired, I completely changed direction, and I got a fellowship to go work with journalists in Africa. And so since about 2004, when I did that, I've worked overseas. It's an amazing thing that's happened in journalism. And it started at about that time where there was a technical transfer of knowledge from Western to Eastern journalists as countries began to open up and places that never had a free press because they were under communist or Chinese or other domination became free, became easier to do it. So it was a different kind of journalism. I feel so, so lucky to be part of that. And I continue it. In January, I'm going to go to North Macedonia to be part of a training of young journalists in that former Yugoslav country. So that's a big part of me. And then I always thought that when I got too old, journalism is a field for young people. There's a lot of running around and late hours. It helps if you socialize with people who are your sources. So it takes a lot out of you. And I always thought when I reached that point, I would go into academia. I love UAlbany. It's an amazingly talented faculty over there. And I did that for a long time. What changed me, why I didn't just ride that into retirement, was Donald Trump. And I felt like journalism and democracy were in danger again. I'm a proud never Trumper. I warn you of that. So take this with a grain of salt. And so I decided that there was a need for people who could do it. They should be doing it. Investigative editing is a kind of specialized field. So I went back in and I did that for two more years. I would still be doing that, except that, you know, my mother's 94. I don't want her living alone. And so I came back, and I'm now feeling my way for the next step. I talk to you about it, what comes next. And I'll do a little teaching. I do some training. I work on the round table. I probably should be doing some writing, but I have to figure out what I want to write about. And I'm seeing my granddaughter. I have three sons. They're fabulous. And I have one granddaughter and a kind of adopted granddaughter who's part of the family. So I'm spoiling two little girls and having a blast at it.
Let me ask you this question. When I just asked you, tell us a little bit about yourself. And you said, I really dislike that question. Do you think that there's still something in the psyche of women today who are not comfortable tooting their own horn?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Wow, I see this all the time with young women. And while, you know, it's like that's editing. You can do it for other people, but not for yourself. Women have no confidence, and men who are far less talented in some cases do have confidence. How does that happen? You know that even on you know, on WAMC, I think Alan has said that he's asked other women. I was not his first choice to be a panelist on that. But women will say, oh, no, I don't have time to do all the preparation I need to do. No, I'm not an expert on this and that. You talk about everything. I only know a few areas. None of the men said that. The men said, sure, we'll do it. Yes, I can do it. And why? Why are women so hard on themselves? And yeah, I see it in myself too. I think the reason I'm not writing more is that I think part of it's being an editor, part of it's being a woman. It's like, oh, it won't be any good. Well, how do I know that? I haven't written a word yet, and I can write. So I think right. If I were, I think men just naturally don't have those high standards and self-doubt that women do. I'm even uncomfortable with their whole idea of inspiring women, Cynthia. I think that's a fabulous idea and much needed. But, you know, what do I do that inspires? My sisters would tell you, I'm just selfish. I've just done what I wanted to do. Is that inspiring? And
yes.
Yet I know when I like look on Facebook and I have postings from all over the world and all these fun things I do, the Facebook life, it's fake, you realize. But I realize that I actually have ended up living a life that most other people only talk about having. And that I'm very grateful for. I've traveled. I have a great family. I have done almost all the things I want to do. There's still a few more, but I have some years left. And I just encourage people to don't put off things. Just figure out what you want and then go get it.
Thank you, Rosemary. You have been listening to Rosemary Armeo talking about her field of journalism. So if you like this show, like Women Who Inspire on Facebook. Thank you. Have a great day. And thanks, Rosemary, for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you, Cynthia. I appreciate your thinking of me.
Bye.